צהריים טובים, ישראל.
Good afternoon.
We're very happy to have you here with us. We're calling you direct to Israel, and we are recording this interview, and we are recording this interview with you today. We wonder if you could tell us a little bit about yourself, where you live, what you do.
Well, I live at a community village of about 276 families at last count, at a place called Shiloh, which is about 28 miles directly north of Jerusalem. I've been here 29 years now. I've been in Israel 40. My wife and I moved here 6 weeks after we got married. I work at present at the Menachem Begin Heritage Center in Jerusalem, in charge of information resources, which oversees the archives, library, website, and research facilities that we provide. I have been involved in other efforts, such as media monitoring, lecturing on Jewish and Zionist history, and even working in the Knesset as a political aide to members of Knesset.
Excellent. We've asked you here today to speak about Yom HaShoah, which is Holocaust Remembrance Day, and more specifically, we'd like you to describe how it's observed in Israel. But before we actually go into a description of the actual events in Israel, if you could please define for our listeners, what is the Holocaust?
The Holocaust, in a sense, was a highly sophisticated version of much of the violence done to Jews in the lands of the exile, where they were helpless and without arms and or ability to organize. We're talking about pogroms. We're talking about what happened to, especially during the Crusades. We're talking about auto de fés in Spain when Jews were burnt at the stake or tortured on the rack during the Inquisition. It's the culmination of all that, where a specific people were targeted as the main political agenda of a regime, and not only was violence done to them, but it was done in such an establishment type of organized fashion that the law courts, all types of social institutions, became all involved in the effort, and basically it was a modern, technologically industrialized plan and program of mass murder.
It's amazing that I remember my sister commenting about that you know, the most amazing aspect of the Holocaust was that it was systematically and routinely carried out, designed and carried out by the government itself.
Quite so. Everything, in fact, was secondary. In the end, first of all, the last command of Hitler was to continue the killing of the Jews. Railway stations, rail lines, industry, troops were rerouted in order to participate in the killing. Everything, in the end, was less important than this. And it's very difficult to grasp that 6 million people were destroyed not only as an enemy, not only as someone who would not accept the regime in power, But that was the raison d'être, the very reason for the existence of the Nazi state was to kill the Jews, not the other way around, that the Nazi state decided to kill Jews for some sort of purpose. It was the killing of the Jews that was the purpose for the existence of the Nazi state.
It's hard, very hard to comprehend. There's a general misconception that Israel, the Jewish state of Israel, was established as a result of the Holocaust. Would you mind clarifying for our listeners, please, this misconception?
Well, of course it is a misconception. Many people would like to think or even believe that it was the Holocaust that, quote-unquote, justified the establishment of the state of Israel, and therefore they can override it, because it was like, as some of the Arabs say specifically, why should we have to pay for the crimes of what Europe did to the Jews? Whereas it's, how do we say in English, it's the cart before the horse. Jews as a people are defined by being a national group in its national homeland. We have returned many times to the land of Israel over the centuries. Way before political Zionism, every single century had Jews coming back, whether it was because of anti-Semitism, for example, after the expulsion from Spain, or because of messianic longings, as during the Shabtai Tzvi period, Hasidic Aliyah starting in 1777, other Aliyot, waves of immigration from Lithuanian yeshiva students starting in the beginning of the 1800s. All this predated Herzl. Jews have been living always in the land of Israel. And so, in a certain sense, it was the failure of Zionism to view the oncoming catastrophe with a sense of real emergency and urgency, so that, if anything, the lack of urgency by certain Zionist leaders contributed to the Holocaust, rather than saying that Israel is obligated by its existence to the Holocaust. If Israel had been established in 1935, there would have been no Holocaust.
Exactly.
Jews, at least in mass numbers, if not all, could have been saved from what later developed in Europe.
Right. I wanted to ask you about, following that, the general atmosphere in Europe that led up to the Holocaust, if you could describe that, and if it's possible at all to make a comparison to the growth of the negative sentiments against Israel and the Jews today.
Well, there are some parallels and there's something unique. In Poland, there was, of course, and Russia, there was, of course, the numerus clausus, the limiting or restricting the numbers of Jews that could be in colleges, universities. People were put out of jobs. They couldn't go into certain areas of employment. But more important, I think, is the objectifying by the non-Jew who is anti-Semitic or doesn't like Jews is also very similar then as it is today. And the sense of a Jew is as being not a real person, but as an image, as a symbol, as something representing some sort of element of what the non-Jew is either afraid of or is perhaps unequal to or jealous of, or very simple. As a poet by the name of Uri Zvi Grinberg wrote, it's an element of hate in the sense that we remind them of certain ethical values which they would prefer not to believe or not to behave in accordance with. And once you look at a person or as a national group or a cultural group in this way, your hatred just simply boils over and you can't wait to do harm. And unfortunately, it's being passed from generation to generation, not as an abnormality, but as something very normal. Right. And
the sense of
a Jew suffering is not limited to any one society, but is fairly well known.
Well, there's a kind of a dehumanization as the of a people, of an existence of a people that is, I would compare almost to the delegitimization of the state of Israel that's going on today. That, you know, if it's sort of in this warped way makes it all right to allow your hatred to come out and to act on it. It's like a, you know,
in a certain sense, you know, some people go out to have a good time and things get out of hand. And if you're alone or two people, you kind of feel embarrassed. But if you're 20 people already, I think they call it the flash rioting or something like that. You know, if many people are doing it, it's okay. And looking at the Jew, it's quite easy because, and of course this is a generalization, I know many who aren't either successful or as smart as non-Jews think we are, but you look at them and you say, I can never be like them, or it's very difficult to be like them, or for some reason they have an advantage which I will never have, and it nurtures. That's on the personal level. But if you add to that a theology stemming from certain strains of Christianity or vestiges of a Christian heritage that looks at the Jew as, you know, the witness to the success of the church and should be downtrodden, which is what happened to a large extent in Christian Europe. Today, it's a different type of belief system. It's the progressive, radical, humanist political camp that is looking for an object to define itself in a negative way. And they say, ah, there's Israel. Israel shouldn't be in the Middle East. Israel shouldn't be in its land. Because if that is so, then many of our own ideological elements and principles, cosmopolitanism, universalism, etc., do not hold up. And therefore we become a sort of a justification for their anger at a challenge to their validity. And it can get very, very complicated.
Can you describe or define the anti-Semitism then and now? Like, what's the difference? And
I think it's not a question of what is different. It's a question of what is similar.
Right.
Difference, of course, is the way that the animosity is mobilized. The similarity is basically the ability to have people believe such untruths, such obvious lies, to think a reality exists when it doesn't. And that is the danger. Some people still cannot either release themselves or free themselves from the need to believe in something bad. And they can't believe it about themselves because then either they commit suicide or they have no social life. So they project and they say, I am not successful financially because they have all the money, or they have all the power, or they have all the ability to create scientific innovations or inventions. rather than saying that the human spirit can do these things and you just have to apply yourselves harder. And in that case, Israel, which is the sole modern miracle of a secular ideology, nationalism, returning the people to its homeland, forget about the Bible, forget about everything else. As they used to say, if there are small states like Armenia or Peru or Costa Rica, why can't there be in Israel? For some reason, people just don't accept that.
What is amazing for me is that 65 years after the Second World War, and again, we are there in front of the entire world, which everyone and each is pointing to us, the Jews, the Jewish state. It's not make any sense. It's, for me, the education is the key, and suddenly I understand that we didn't educate for 65 years. This is clear for me that somebody failed in this level.
But there was a failure. There's a failure to educate.
I can tell you a story that for me was very important. 1966, I was in a summer camp up in the Catskills, and before taking the kids out on a 5-mile hike, the counselors got up extra early and did it so that we would know the way. We came upon a little clearing in the middle of nowhere, and literally there was this old couple in chairs swinging back and forth. Both of them were corn cob pipes, just out of the movies. And we walked close and we said, excuse us, we're just walking by. We now know there's a house here. We won't come close. And I had a kippah, a yarmulke on my head. I think I was about 18 and a half. And he looked at me and he said, "What's that hat on your head?" And I said, "I'm a religious Jew and I wear something on my head." He said, "You're Jewish?" And I said, "Yes." He said, "Take it off. I want to see your horns."
Now, unbelievable. Unbelievable.
But to actually believe that there are people who believe that Jews have horns is so out of touch with reality that sometimes we can't be logical or rational about this anti-Semitism or today's hatred or putting Israel in such an impossible corner. It just sometimes you have to realize that you don't have an ability to overcome this. That's why we need a state of Israel, because without its possibilities of the use of power, whether in Israel or abroad, and Tevi comes to mind, then no Jew is safe anywhere.
We had mentioned in a previous conversation about Dubai, the ability for Israel's existence, but for us to act on behalf of the world, in a sense.
Well, the fact that some people refuse to recognize the existence of a movement of terror based not only on politics, but on theology or a theological interpretation of what the world is supposed to look like is probably one of the major failures of the so-called progressive humanist camp. You mentioned Dubai, and we all know that no evidence has ever been produced that ties any Israeli with that. They've shown you pictures I haven't the faintest idea who those people are. They really could be British people, for all I know. But it's so convenient, on the one hand, to blame Israel, and as you basically said, on the other hand, not understand that if indeed Israel was behind this, it was doing everybody a favor, because there really is an enemy out there. We perhaps are on the what we call the cutting edge, but just behind us are railway stations or subway stations in Moscow, Twin Towers in Manhattan, and other train stations in Spain and tubes in London.
Right. Okay. And historically, we again today are looking to the existence of the State of Israel as was then the existence of the Jew, and Israel is being blamed for all the world's ills and for a potential modern day Holocaust. What is it about the Jews and the existence of the Jewish state that awakens so much the antagonism and blame and, you know,
justification
for hate?
One aspect that one has to understand is the need for someone to objectify, as I mentioned before, the other. That releases you, I think, from the need to feel that you are a failure, because you can point the finger and say it's his fault, not mine. That it's not an subjective element, but an objective element. I mean, if the Jew is rich, if the Jew is successful, if the Jew is pretty, if the Jew is something else that you're not, then you feel okay, because it's not your fault. Or if the Jew, as I mentioned before, reminds you of certain values or ethics that you don't want to observe, then okay, you throw it on him and release yourself. One issue you probably are aware of is the charge of Israel as an apartheid state.
Yes.
Right.
You know, you point to Israel, and some people even go as far as to say that, you know, it's a Nazi state. Of course, you can't find a single concentration camp, but that doesn't bother people. But apartheid sounds normal. I mean, there was a South Africa once. And I remind, I think, most of the listeners who perhaps come from the United States that in the South, just over 40 years ago or so, there were coloreds who couldn't eat at restaurants, at the same table, at the same toilet they couldn't go to. They couldn't drink from the same water fountain. That wasn't apartheid. That was simple discrimination. And anybody who comes to Israel can see the reality that doesn't exist. Jaffa, Haifa, Rahat, we, as you know, as you probably know, we have members of Knesset that are Arab who are very anti-Zionist.
Exactly.
And how can you do that? But they do, because it's convenient, because it doesn't mean you have to think. You just throw out a word. And so when a Jew in the Middle Ages was the devil, or the communist in the 20th century, but of course for the Russian communist, the Jew was the bourgeoisie. You know,
right.
No, we couldn't do anything right. That's the same thing today, in a certain sense, in different languages, in different terms, but it's the same type of purposeful misconception that makes people feel safe, secure in their lack of accomplishment and achievement.
We have the, you know, that word systematic keeps popping up in my mind, and we have the systematic during the Holocaust, the government prescribed a way of ridding themselves of something or somebody, but the how do I say it it seems almost, you know, clearly purposeful movement to kind of erase us as a people, erase the Jewish state of Israel by throwing out rumors. And, you know, as generations come up, they seem to forget the history. And these things, these misconceptions start to become realities. And this is quite dangerous. How can we sort of secure the future of our children against such a phenomenon? How can we stop that from happening when it seems that misconception, the ease to believe such kinds of misconceptions repeats itself over and over again, and this is a constant thing that keeps happening throughout the ages.
I have no 1% solutions on this. it's a matter of, I guess, first of all, not giving in, and secondly, understanding, especially today, that the state of Israel, with all its faults, with all that is we ourselves criticize, and as many people have said, there's no other state in which its citizens criticize its government so much.
Yes.
still, we have to understand that without Israel, not only is Jewish culture and Jewish tradition in danger, but funnily enough, in a very unfunny way, the personal security of many of the Jews who are in the forefront of the criticism of Israel will be up for scrutiny and will become, perhaps quite quickly, even before they can turn around, endangered themselves. You know, recent demonstrations in New York or events on college campuses. I understand, since I don't know exactly which, can't remember which one, I'll probably take a very good guess. For example, when the Goldstone report came out, certain even Jewish campuses would not allow a debate to be held.
Right.
And this is so, you know, it's like one of the, we used to joke about the two things wrong with the Jews. They tremble too much and they bend over backwards too much. And at least if we have the ability to instruct and give our children other more correct ways of responding to learning history, to realizing what the truth is, I think that's the best thing that we can do. Otherwise, each one has to realize that, as someone told me recently, without the community, there are no Jews. Jews are literally forced to come together. Once they try to break that down and become too individualistic, we're lost, and they are lost specifically. It will not help. On the eve of the Holocaust, there were many German Jews who felt it couldn't happen in such a cultured country with the poet of Heine, et cetera, et cetera. And we cannot allow ourselves, because of personal, political, ideological inclinations, humanistic, Unitarian, progressive, et cetera, socialist, to think that this will save us. That's been tried. There were no better communists than Jewish communists. There were no better socialists than Jewish Bundists. There were no better Germans or even Polish intelligentsia than Jewish Polish intelligentsia.
Right.
It did not help.
Right.
And to undermine Israel in such a vicious manner, as some of the people that I've been involved with on blog sites and commentaries, something like that, is just beyond me.
Well, it's a horrible phenomenon, and I wish we could stop it. I would like to, we're going to have to come to an end, but I would like to go back to the first question that we asked you. If you could describe how Yom HaShoah is observed in Israel, because I remember, and I will hopefully be there actually next week to be able to participate. One of the most amazing things for me as a new immigrant 25 years ago or so was when the siren went off on Yom HaShoah, on Holocaust Day, and everybody around me, everywhere, stopped. It was like, you know, when you see in a movie, you know, everything freezes. And everybody stood for a moment of silence, no matter where they were. Cars stopped, whatever. If you could just describe that. For me, it was a most amazing moment. If you could describe what goes on in Israel on Yom HaShoah, what is actually the day like?
Well, I had a teacher in political science, Dr. Charles Liebman, who coined the phrase secular religion. And I know there's a long-standing argument between those who are religious and those who are not about Zionism, but if there's any major contribution that the State of Israel has done in terms of memorial conceptions, the idea of sounding off a siren once at night and once in the morning, which happens on Yom HaShoah and also on the Remembrance Day for the Fallen of Israel, parallels what I think Shabbat is all about. Shabbat distances you, separates you from the world of commerce, of doing, of accomplishment, and simply saying you have a spiritual time period now. And in a certain sense, this is what happens on Holocaust Day. As you said, the siren sounds, traffic stops. Most, if not all, the people will get out of the car and stand on the road. People stop whatever they're doing. I've been in places inside offices and in the middle. We get very involved. All of a sudden, the siren will go off and you'll stop. And people are supposed to remember. They're supposed to remember family members who are not with us. Or remember stories of heroism. People who, despite it all, managed to survive both concentration camps, partisan groups in the forest, or simply people hiding in walls or in holes in the ground. People who survived their neighbors, people who survived because of their neighbors. Jews who were given over to the church and returned or not. And you're given 2 minutes. You know, many people say, God forbid you're struck with a terminal disease, and you know, first question is, how long do I have? You know, and then you say, well, what are you going to do with those 6 months? Here we're given 2 minutes to try to think of what was and what should not ever be again.
Impressive. Right.
Yisrael, we thank you so much for being a guest on our show. And maybe we'll meet in Israel as well. If you come back to America, we do hope that we will get a chance to speak to you again, whether here or there. And we thank you immensely for being with us today.
I thank you for the opportunity of speaking so long, and I hope that the listeners will pay attention to both the questions and what I attempted as the answers.
If our listeners would like to contact you, is there somewhere, or learn about the Menachem Begin Heritage Center?
Well, the Begin Center has a website.
Yeah.
BeginCenter.org.il. And my blog is My Right Word, MyRightWord, blogspot.com. You're more than welcome to come around and see what I have to say.
Excellent. We will post that on our website as well so our listeners can find you. Again, thank you, Yisrael, so much.